Well, over the past few weeks, we have been examining life under the sun with the help of the teacher, Solomon. And as we have, as Solomon himself says, chapter 12, verse 9, he's pondered, we've searched out, he's set in order. And as we've done that, we've kept bumping up against this phrase, everything is meaningless. Life under the sun is ultimately meaningless, transient, vapor-like. And into that, Solomon has therefore encouraged us to enjoy food, enjoy drink, enjoy our relationships, enjoy our work. But ultimately, he concludes they're all meaningless. They're mere vapor, transient. And he's realistic about the difficulties of life, that life is hard, there are dark days, life isn't always what it seems, what we desire. And as he comes to the end of his studies, he comes to his conclusion, the answer to how to live wisely, how to make sense of this world. And the answer on one level seems so obvious, so simple, and yet at the same time, so profound. Bono, the U2 singer, wrote this. He said, Ecclesiastes is one of my favorite books. It's a book about a character who wants to find out why he is alive, why he was created. He tries knowledge, he tries wealth, he tries experience, he tries everything. You hurry to the end of the book to find out why, and it says, remember your creator. And in a way, Bono says, it's such a letdown. And yet it isn't. It isn't because knowing your creator is the most important thing one can do. It is what brings meaning and understanding to a fallen world. So firstly then, remember your creator. Remember your creator. See that in 12 verse 1, remember your creator in the days of your youth. See it in 12 verse 6, remember him. Remember your creator. But that's not where Solomon begins. He begins by encouraging us to enjoy life. So chapter 11 verse 7, he says, light is sweet. It pleases the eyes to see the sun. However many years anyone may live, let them enjoy them all. And there is, isn't there, much in life to enjoy. You know, the first shaft of morning sunshine over a shimmering sea, full rainbow against dark clouds, a blazing campfire on a warm summer's night, the twinkling lights of home after a long journey, the embrace of a loved one. How sweet life can be. And yes, Solomon says, verse 8, we're to remember the days of darkness, for there will be many. Dark days are days of trouble, the days of sadness, sickness, the death of a loved one, parent, a grandparent. There will be days of darkness. And as such, he says, verse 9, you who are young, and we know who you are this morning. You, the ones who did not stand. At verse 9, you who are young, be happy while you are young. And let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. Do it whilst you can. Do it whilst your bodies are strong and getting stronger and your hearts are full of good cheer and easy laughter and the future is full of possibility and there's a freedom to take risks and time to go in a new direction in life. Enjoy it whilst you have no major responsibilities. Enjoy life. Make the most of being young. And yet, verse 9, do so knowing there's judgment, that you'll have to give an account to the Lord. So don't sin in your enjoyment. Verse 10, banish anxiety, pain from your heart. Cast off the troubles of your body. In other words, avoid pain. Avoid trouble.
Because youth and vigour are meaningless.
Literally, the word meaningless here means transient, vapour-like. So do all you can to avoid life. Enjoy it whilst you're young. Because it's brief. So how do you enjoy life? Make the most of it. And yet do so knowing that there are dark days, that this life is transient, it's short, it's vapour. How do you hold that tension? 12 verse 1. You remember your Creator. And what is it to remember your Creator? Well, it's to remember you are created, not creator. It's to remember you are dependent, not supplier. It's to remember you're finite, not infinite. It's to remember you're made with meaning and purpose, not meaningless and transient. It's to remember that there is more than life just under the sun, but that there is life above the sun. See, when you remember your Creator, firstly, you'll remember this life under the sun is not all there is. See, remembering your Creator will mean that you will not put onto the enjoyments of life a weight they cannot sustain. See, when one remembers their Creator, you recognize that the delights and the pleasures of this world, relationships and work and sport and games and fun and pleasure, see, all find their fulfillment, their completeness, their satisfaction, not now, but in eternity. But if you do not remember your Creator, what you'll do is you'll expect and seek fulfillment and completeness now. And when your relationships and work and your games and your sport and your fun and your pleasure don't match your expectations, don't fulfill in the way that you expect or hope, or the days of trouble come, and they will, ruining or straining or making those things unavailable so that you can't work or you can't play sport and you can't enjoy the relationships as you did. Your child gets ill, you get ill. And the fulfillment and the completeness that you hoped for and longed for is not there. You'll be disappointed, frustrated. You'll believe it's all meaningless. Much like how many of us do Christmas. It strikes me at Christmas, everyone ends up a little disappointed. Why? Because mostly we set expectations unrealistically. And we bought into the lie of the TV and the movie and the Hollywood version of Christmas. And the reality is we don't get everything we want. Or it's not quite the gift we'd hoped for. And the stress of the day is there, and it does bring tension because everyone's so busy trying to enjoy it that we forget to enjoy it. And the peace we yearn for is not there. We labour with such expectation, we end up disappointed. And we can do that with life. We can pile it with such expectations, such hopes. And it was never designed to have all that put onto it. And so Solomon's wisdom is, no, remember your Creator that you might enjoy the things of this life without putting a wrong weight, a wrong expectation upon them, but instead you enjoy them properly as gifts, as those things that point to something far greater that will not satisfy you or fulfill you completely now, but are meant to lead you and to lift your eyes to someone far greater, where you will find joy and peace and satisfaction and fulfillment in them. And enjoying both the gifts rightly and the giver who gave them and who does satisfy and who does ultimately fulfill all our needs can only come by remembering our Creator. When one understands life from the perspective of their Creator. And remembering your Creator begins to transform not just the way in which you enjoy things, but also those days of darkness. Because now, well, one, you'll know those days of darkness will end. That this life is not all there is. That this life is not even the completeness that it should be. That it is just a shadow that's been distorted of something far greater, that there is something so much more to come. The darkness will end. And for those who remember their Creator, we know elsewhere in the Bible that it teaches that these dark days are not random. These dark days are not under the influence of some evil power, evil force that is trying to resist the work of the Creator. No, they're under the Creator's hands, who loves you and who has ordained and allowed them each and every day. And he does so with a purpose and a meaning. We might not always see and understand, but knowing and trusting he does allows us to rest in his purposes, knowing that he uses them for our good and ultimately for his glory. It transforms the dark days as we seek to trust him with them. See, remembering your Creator transforms how you view life under the sun. It transforms your expectations about that which you can enjoy. And it transforms the dark days. And you begin to see each day as a gift from God, a gift you did not deserve. But the second big reason we're to remember our Creator, says Solomon, is that we're to do so before it's too late. C12 verse 1, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. He's already told us, 11 verse 10, that youth and vigor are meaningless, literally transient. It doesn't last. And now he says, remember your Creator before those days of trouble come. And when you're young, you think you're indestructible, immortal, uncontainable. I mean, you could eat like a horse without looking like a horse. Life's a wide open road. Everything lies before you, but it doesn't last. In part, that is why Solomon is urging those who are young to enjoy life, because when you're young, you have the faculties and the strength and the energy to be able to enjoy them. But it doesn't last. Age creeps up. The days of trouble come, 12 verse 1. The years approach when you'll say, I'll find no pleasure in them, because you have not the energy or the faculties to do so. And verses 2 and to 5 give a beautiful poetic picture of old age. It begins, verse 2, the sun and the light, the moon and the stars grow dark, the clouds return after the rain. The subtle message of our own mortality begins, that the sun, the light, the moon, the stars begin to grow dim. You're driving with a friend, and they ask why you squint at all the road signs. You're walking down the street, and you notice that policemen really do look younger. Your seven-year-old thinks his teacher looks ancient. You think, why is a teenager teaching my child? Initially, it's the odd raindrop, which acts as a reminder of your passing youth. And then with time, the raindrops become more persistent and stronger, so everything hurts when you wake up, and what doesn't hurt doesn't work. The actors on the TV seem to mumble nowadays, and you're glad for subtitles. The smile lines don't go away when you stop smiling. You try to straighten out the wrinkles in your socks, only to realize you're not wearing any. Even the music in the 70s appears better than the music of today. The fashion of your youth is back in vogue, but you find no pleasure in them. But what was the occasional shower suddenly becomes a torrent. The empty nest, the 50 candles, the bifocals, the Atkins diet. Now there's no denying it, although we'll try. Black hair gone grey suddenly becomes black again, or better still, blonde. Wrinkles disappear, the skin becomes shiny courtesy of Botox. The family estate car is traded in for a white sports car. And for a while, we delude ourselves that the aging process has been put on hold. But the calendar pages still tick, still turn. The clock steadily ticks. Time relentlessly marches on. There's no escaping it. As the writer says, the clouds return after the rain. You're not going to wake up one morning and suddenly find yourself young again. You may still feel as if you are 30 years old on the inside, but on the outside, your body reminds you you're not. And verses 3 to 5 are then a very imaginative way of describing what eventually happens to us all. And it's operating at two levels, the literal and the metaphorical. So at the literal level, verse 3, yes, even strong men, even the footballers we watch on the TV, the athletes we admired at the Olympics, these strong men eventually begin to stoop. The days of having a lie-in are gone, verse 4. Because no matter how hard you try, you can't help but wake up early. Either you need the loo, or you're woken by the sound of the dawn chorus. Except that because of your failing hearing, the sound gets fainter and fainter until you can't hear anything at all without your hearing aid. There's also that increasing sense of vulnerability, verse 5, and nervousness we feel as we get older, so that climbing ladders becomes a scary business. Men are afraid of heights, verse 5. And it seems suddenly rather unwise to venture out on your own onto the street at night, because who knows, you might get mugged or have an accident. Dangers in the street, verse 5, you begin to see. Doesn't end there. Even our sexual appetite is affected. Desire is no longer stirred, verse 5. At the same time, we have picture language being employed to describe what happens as the body is likened to a house falling into disrepair. So there are the keepers of the house trembling, verse 3, referring to the arms, no longer as strong as they once were. You lift a weight and the bingo wings begin to shake. The strong men stooping refers to the leg. The grinders, your teeth begin to fall out or disintegrate or cause you pain. Those looking through windows grown dim are the eyeglasses that are needed. Large print Bibles are required. The almond tree blossoms is the hair turning white. The grasshopper dragging himself along is a picture of ungainly walking as we shuffle along the road, no longer able to conduct ourselves with a spring in our step, but with a stick by our side or a frame in our hands. Time, they say, is a great healer, but it's a lousy beautician. And where is it all heading? Death, verse 6. Remember him, that is God, before the silver cord is severed or the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring and the wheel broken at the well, and the dust returns to the ground it came from and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Remember your Creator before it is too late. Before you return to the dust. The picture back in Genesis 2 where God created us out of dust. You return to that dust. Remember your Creator before it's too late. The wise young person. That is, we won't name it, but those of you who are feeling young. They place their trust in God now, not knowing when death will come or troubles arrive, but knowing that actually youth and vigor will not last. Age and death will ultimately catch them up, that they will become that 30-year-old, that 40-year-old, that 60-year-old, that 80-year-old. You're not invincible. And so Solomon says, remember your Creator whilst you can. Remember your Creator. Remember your Creator. We know this side of the cross means to trust in Jesus, who we're told in Colossians 1 is our Creator. It's to place your hope in him, so that the dust you return to may be raised into a resurrected body to be with him for all eternity. The lie of the devil says, live life now and then become a Christian later. Young people, that is foolishness to the extreme. Because it assumes that you will have time to prepare for death, which is not necessarily the case. And even if you do die in old age, you may be so drugged up to the eyeballs you don't have a clue what is going on anyway. Remember your Creator in your youth, whilst you're able to say yes, before death arrives or aging begins, whilst you have strength and energy, that actually you might be able to serve wholeheartedly in ways that you just can't when you get older. Using your strength and your energy and your youth, not just to be a couch potato stuck in front of a box, the Xbox or the TV box, but you're out sharing the gospel with others, using whatever talents you have in serving Him and His people, not just yourself. And discovering that true enjoyment of life comes in serving Him, comes in serving others. That's where true joy and true meaning arrive. Remember your Creator. Will mean life is far from meaningless. It has purpose now and for eternity. The wise older person remembers their Creator, not wishing they were younger, not looking to remain youthful and investing time and money in doing so, but confident in their hope, using the wisdom they have gained to encourage and help others, to disciple others, using what energy they have to serve their Creator and looking forward to the resurrection hope of having bodies that work once more, with minds that recall, with eyes that see, with ears that hear, with sleep that is undisturbed, and seeking to die with grace and hope. There is something quite remarkable about seeing an old believer, actually any believer, die well, where peace and grace and confidence about. And that only happens if you remember your Creator. See, life is far from meaningless and transient when one remembers one's Creator. But Solomon doesn't leave it there. He spells out what remembering your Creator will mean further. Secondly, fear God. Fear God. Everything matters. See chapter 12, verses 9 to 14. He begins verse 9 to 11. We begin to see his purpose in writing. He wishes to impart his knowledge. He wishes for us, as it were, to learn from his mistake, his explorations, his great wise learning. And verse 11, we see that his wise words are to be a spiritual prod. See verse 11, the words of the wise are like goads. Their collective saying like firmly embedded nails given by one shepherd. That one shepherd is God. His words are wise. And they're to act like a goad. A goad was a staff with nails in it to kind of prod the sheep along, to spur them on. And the teacher is declaring that the writings of this book that we've enjoyed over the last few weeks are God's words. And they're to be a spiritual prod, to prod us on, to do spiritual good. And what is that spiritual good? Well, verse 13, here's his conclusion. Now all has been heard. Here's the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. And as the book concludes, you see, we're reminded that the teacher's purpose is not that we just remember our Creator. Many believe there is a God. No, to remember your Creator is to fear Him. And fearing God, we discover in Deuteronomy 10, verse 12, is to walk in obedience to Him. It's to love Him. It's to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, and to observe the Lord's commands and his decrees. Put simply, to fear him is to follow him, to obey him, to serve him. The one who Solomon says is our shepherd. And the shepherd, we learned only in John 10, is Jesus. He is the good shepherd. To fear God then, to fear the shepherd, is to fear Jesus. It's to follow him. It's to walk in obedience to him. It's to love him. It's to serve Jesus with all your heart and with all your soul. The wise person obeys, loves, and serves Jesus. The shepherd, who's also our maker. Which, of course, if you just stop and think about it, makes sense, doesn't it? Because if you want to understand the world you live in, you ask the maker. You ask the creator. Who is not remote, but is also your shepherd. Of which Jesus says of himself, John 10, I am the good shepherd and I have come, not so that they may have total understanding about how the world works, but I have come that they may have life to the full. Meaningful, abundant life. Not a meaningless life, not a transient life, not a vapor life, but an abundant life. Following Jesus, fearing God, fearing him, loving, obeying, serving Christ is the way to an abundant life. To life as it was designed to be, as those dependent on him and resting in him, who guides us with his word, who makes sense of the world around us. And this shepherd declares as well, he lays down his life for his sheep. He bears their judgment. He bears the judgment we rightly face for our rebellion against our Creator, for those days when we don't remember him and those days when we don't fear him as we should. And he bears that judgment upon a cross such that those who follow him, fear him, may be declared righteous, that is right before him, and therefore able to have that full abundant life now and for eternity. Life as it was meant to be, far from a life of meaningless and transient, instead a life that is secure and firm and safe. But then Solomon gives his second reason we're to fear him. See verse 14. He'll bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. Oh, those who are trusting Jesus are safe from that judgment. But Solomon doesn't finish here for that reason. He finishes with judgment because he wants us to see that far from everything being meaningless and transient and vapor life, here we discover everything matters. Everything matters because God will judge. Without a God, nothing matters. If there is no God, if there is no judgment, well, it's hard to see if anything matters at all. There's no ultimate authority who will put things right. There's no ultimate authority who will hold me accountable to a certain standard. Life is indeed meaningless. But if there's a God who will judge the world, then everything matters. This is not all there is. There's a God in heaven who rules the world. There's a life to come after this life. One day the dead will be raised and every person who has ever lived will stand before God for judgment. And when that day comes, it will be revealed that everything anyone ever did or said or thought has eternal significance. At the final judgment, it will matter how we used our time. Whether we wasted it on foolish pleasures or we worked hard for the Lord, fearing and obeying him. It will matter what we did with our money, whether we spent it on ourselves or invested it in the eternal kingdom. It will matter what we did with our bodies, what our eyes saw, our hands touched, our mouths spoke. It will matter whether we obeyed our mother and father. It will matter the look we gave them and the little comment we made as we were walking away. What we did for a 2-year-old, what we did for our 2-year-old, our 8-year-old, our 10-year-old, our 15-year-old will matter. The way we made time for them or not. What we said about someone else's performance will matter. The sarcastic remark or the word of genuine praise. The proud boast and the selfless sacrifice will matter. The household task and the homework assignment will matter. The cup of water, the tear of compassion, the word of testimony will matter. The final message of Ecclesiastes is not that nothing matters, but that everything matters. What we did, how we did it, why we did it, will all have eternal significance. And the reason everything matters is because everything in the universe is subject to the final verdict of a righteous God who knows every secret. Everything matters. And what matters most, therefore, is whether you're listening to the shepherd, whether you're fearing God, whether you're loving, obeying, and serving him, whether the teacher's wise words have prod us on to see actually we face judgment and our only hope is Jesus, the good shepherd who lays down his life. Ecclesiastes doesn't end with a promise of grace, but with a warning of judgment. It's a goad, it's a prod to make us think, to remember our Creator, to listen to the Shepherd, to live in light of Him. Only then will life make sense. Will life be abundant? Will life be as it was meant to be? Take a moment to pause, reflect, think, whether you're young or whether you're old. Maybe you've never trusted in Jesus. You've never feared him as we're called to. Maybe today is the day to remember your Creator as you ought to. Not that there's just a God, but to fear God, to love, obey, and serve him. To place your trust in the cross, to know that he has taken your judgment, that you might stand on that final judgment with no fear and no condemnation, but to then live knowing that everything matters. Where are you before your Creator this day?